We are going to talk about a new species of bat that was recently found in Wisconsin and get the latest news on the spread of a disease that is threatening Wisconsin's bat populations. And we'll welcome your bat-related questions this hour, whether you want to attract bats to your property or help save them. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, September 19th. We have with us two guests from Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources to talk with you about the bat species in Wisconsin, and they'll answer your questions and respond to your concerns at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And if you go to the Facebook page, you will see a photo of some little brown bats that I discovered walking into work this morning. They are on at the entrance of Wisconsin Public Radio Studios, Vilas Hall on the UW-Madison campus. And then we also took a short video where our guests are telling us why they are there. So you can check that out on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, our guests are Jennifer Riddell, a cave and mine specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us is Paul White, a mammal ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, let me just, if people haven't seen this little video yet that we just posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, I am greeted by these little brown bats, and they are little brown bats, and that just so happens to be their name, right? That's their species.
Right, exactly, yep, little brown bats.
And those little brown bats were hanging around the entrance, the third floor entrance of Vilas Hall. One was hanging in a corner, one was just hanging on the side of the wall, and the other one was, I didn't take the third one because he was in kind of a dark corner and it was hard to see him anyway, but why are they there?
So those little brown bats started migrating from the place where they spend their summer, which might be somebody's bat house or someone's attic or a tree in the woods somewhere. They started migrating around August 15th, and they're headed to a cave or a mine somewhere, maybe as far as 180 or 250 miles away, to spend the winter where they're going to hibernate.
So they hibernate in, the little brown bat will hibernate in a cave during the winter months.
Correct.
Neat. And there is a big cave in Wisconsin, probably many, but there's a real big one somewhere around Horicon Marsh, isn't there?
Yeah, we have, and it's not a natural, excuse me, not a natural cave, but it's a former abandoned iron mine called Nita Mine. And traditionally, or historically, we've had about 143,000 bats that hibernate there, and most of those are little brown bats.
Why would they find the side of a brick wall outside an entrance of a building an attractive place to hang?
Sure. Well, as they are migrating, they're looking for a spot that's secluded, usually out of the way, and something that provides a structure for them to be able to hold on to as they're sitting there for the day. And so bricks often provide that similar type of environment as a cave or a mine, and it also provides thermal energy during the day, so it keeps them warm so they don't have to expend energy to stay warm during the day.
So they're going to stay there most of the day. I usually see them at 4 o'clock in the morning when I come in, but they stay there for the most part
the
day.
In some cases, they may actually be foraging and then coming down and then roosting at around that time and settling in for the day and then leaving at night, either migrating or doing some foraging bouts around town and then coming right back to that spot.
Well, very cool. So they are, when they're foraging, they're eating the mosquitoes that are hanging around the lights there. There are some lights there,
sure.
Too.
Sure. Mosquitoes, moths, and a lot of other insects that might be attracted to that environment.
And when I looked at it and I said I knew that there was a species called the little brown bat, and it is a little brown bat, but how do we know it's not a baby big brown bat?
Right. Well, the pictures do help us define, you know, what the defining characteristics are. So the little browns are, like their name would imply, about half the size of a big brown bat. So a little brown weighs anywhere from 7 to 12 grams. So that's about 2 nickels worth. And so if you look at a big brown, they're much larger in comparison. They have a broad muzzle. They are often very rich, dark brown, whereas little browns often are very pale in comparison. And the big browns, like I said, are just much larger bat, anywhere from 12 to 25 grams.
How many other bat species are common in Wisconsin?
Well, we used to say there are 7 species of bats that use Wisconsin as a summer but also a winter area. And just recently we were able to discover the evening bat in southern Wisconsin. So that was an exciting find. So now we can officially say that there has been 8 species recorded in Wisconsin.
And that was where I was leaded to. The DNR researchers announced the discovery of the evening bat. And it's in southern Wisconsin. It also apparently winged its way up to Minnesota. Why is this, a surprising discovery?
Well, it is surprising in the sense that we haven't recorded them up to this point, but I think that we have to take a step back and look at our monitoring efforts have increased tenfold since white nose syndrome, and so there's been a lot of people looking for bats. So the area that we found the evening bat in Wisconsin is not an area that you're going to have a picnic in. It is a very it's an environment that is often very swampy. It's a riparian area, and it is, we talked about mosquitoes, there are a lot of mosquitoes. So it's an environment that people aren't necessarily looking for bats initially. And so as we were expanding our search, looking for different varieties of habitats that bats use, we discovered this one. It's also interesting to look at the Minnesota finding to see exactly if these bats are actually roosting there, or if this is a bat that maybe had gotten off course during migration. But we still have a little more information to gather on the Minnesota finding.
All right. So so do we know for sure that now this bat is going to be setting up household here for good, that it's moved north and it's made Wisconsin its home?
Yes, well, we were able to capture at least 3 individuals this summer, and we placed small transmitters on them where we would, they brought us back to their maternity colonies, which were silver maple trees, and they had about 60 of their other roost fellows there. And then at that point, we had followed them later in that summer, and we had found about 100 bats. So we did see some reproductive success there, and so we know that they do roost in Wisconsin.
So we're talking about the little and the big brown bat in Wisconsin. The evening bat looks like what?
Well, it looks like a small big brown, just to try and get you confused a little more. But it is a very rich, dark brown, pale underside. It has a broad broad muzzle. It has a curved tragus, which is very similar to like an earlobe or a small piece of tissue in the ear, which helps receive echolocation calls. But there's a variety of other characteristics, forearm length, and then their weight as well. And so all of that combined, and pictures, of course, we had taken and sent out to biologists who are very familiar with this species, and that confirmed the presence of this bat.
And have you smelled this bat?
Yeah, and we did, and it's something more anecdotal than anything. It's not necessarily a defining characteristic. It's just something that I think originally alerted us to it and said, oh, well, this is an interesting smell. And again, provided that information to other folks that are used to handling this bat, and they said, yes, it does have a strong musty, almost burnt type smell. And so they
burnt oranges.
Burnt oranges, yeah. And again, it's going to depend on each person's olfactory senses.
And I've read that that this bat is not necessarily affected, and I don't know, maybe we can pull Jennifer into the conversation. This bat is not affected by white nose syndrome.
Yeah, the bats that we have, the 8 species now that we have in Wisconsin, fall into 2 groups. So we've got a team called the cave bats and a team called the tree bats. And they all use trees, or can use trees, during the summertime when they're here. But the cave bat species specifically go to caves and mines to hibernate, potentially within the state or somewhere nearby. And the tree species are the migratory species, so they may go far south. We've got a species that may travel as far as Mexico during the winter months. And the evening bat is a tree species, so it's a migratory bat. We know that white nose syndrome only affects the cave hibernating bats that use caves and mines. So this species is likely, very likely, not affected by white-nose syndrome.
We're going to get more information on the latest developments when it comes to white-nose syndrome and how it's affecting the bat population in Wisconsin and how we might protect bats from it after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. And we do have open lines for you if you have questions or concerns about bats. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Two guests with us from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Jennifer Riddell and Paul White. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Researchers recently announced the discovery of a new bat species in Wisconsin, the evening bat. We are talking with two experts to learn more about this bat and to get an update on white-nose syndrome in Wisconsin and talk about bat behavior, especially during this time of year. And we're welcoming your questions and your experiences or your observations when it comes to the bats of Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We have, as I mentioned, two guests with us. Jennifer Riddell is a cave and mine specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Paul White is a mammal ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We have a number of comments on Facebook, but open lines, so you can fill one of them at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Gary on Facebook says about the evening bat, I am guessing that someone will be claiming that this is due to global warming, except that this part of the state, like many other areas, has not experienced any warning, as documented in the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts. Gary is in northern Wisconsin, and he posted a map that showed in northern Wisconsin zero temperature change, something along those lines. He goes on to say, in the city limits of Hurley and Montreal, there has been a dramatic drop in bat numbers from years ago, but this is most likely to the old mine shafts filling with water. Well, let's talk about that. First of all, a dramatic decline in bat populations in northern Wisconsin. Gary thinks it's due to old mine shafts filling with water. Jennifer, is that possibly the case?
Well, so it's an interesting story in the background on this for folks that don't know about Hurley, is that it's a former mining town in the Iron Belt of northern Wisconsin. So there are these very deep, in some cases thousands of feet, deep mine shafts, and then the drifts that extend outward from them that were mined for iron ore around the turn of the century. And since those mines were abandoned, as they were mining, they were filling with water. They were actively pumping and dewatering the mines in order to go down that deep. But when the mines and as the mines were abandoned, the water began filling the mine shafts, and bats that had moved into those areas over the many decades of mining very quickly were driven up and out of the mines. And with one mine in particular, the last mine operating up there, we think that bats had ended up forced into that site over the years as other mines closed down. So there were a large number of bats driven out one winter back, I think it was around 1965 or so. And so a lot of bats died, and that's an example of how bats are susceptible to decline in dramatic ways because they gather in these concentrated numbers in critical habitat, like a cave or a mine. They can't spend the winter elsewhere. So the bats that are around the Hurley area today don't necessarily hibernate there. We do know there's still bats hibernating in some of those mine shafts in the areas that, of course, aren't filled with water. But it's very likely that the bats that residents see around Hurley are coming in from other areas where they're spending the winter. So maybe the UP of Michigan, which has a lot of open and available mine shafts for hibernation. And then those bats come up and out of the mines. They fly off into other areas during the summer months. So to say it's likely is hard to pinpoint. We don't have a lot of baseline data on where those hurley bats are hibernating during this time.
It wasn't too long ago that I was in Iron Mountain, Michigan, and they have an old mine shaft that bats still hang out in because it's almost a tourist attraction to watch them take off at night.
Yeah, that's the Millie Hill Mine, and it's a site that's gated off so that humans are protected, but the bats can access the mine shaft, and there are thousands of bats, again, historically, that have hibernated there. And in the fall, they're coming back right at this time of the year, and bats swarm outside those mine entrances. So it's a spectacular, beautiful thing to watch on a moonlit night, like we've had the last few nights around here. And in the springtime, they come up and out, in late April or mid-May, and spread out across potentially thousands of square miles of the summer landscape, and they come and do their insect eating.
Now, I'm wondering if I don't know about Hurley, but a dramatic drop in bat numbers. Are we seeing a dramatic drop in bat numbers due to white nose syndrome?
We are. So, white nose syndrome has been affecting those mines in the UP of Michigan for several years. It's now been affecting caves and mines in Wisconsin, throughout Wisconsin, for a few winters. And that includes Nita Mine, our largest hibernation site. So we've seen a dramatic decline in the sites where white nose has been present for more than just one winter. The process of the decline usually lasts two or three winters, and during that time period when the disease arrives and begins to affect bats at that site, the drop goes from whatever the baseline number was, but the decline can reach 95 or 99%.
That's terrible. I mean, that means totally wiped out. Just about.
Correct, and that's a really average expectation for what we're going to see with our Wisconsin hibernation sites in the coming winter.
For those who haven't been following this, and the last time I did a bat show, I think it was when it hadn't quite been discovered in Wisconsin, but it was wiping out bat populations to the east of us, and it was thought that it was going to come here, and it did, and that's the same thing's going to happen here.
Yeah, all indications are that what we've seen out east, as the disease has rapidly spread its way westward, all indications point to us seeing the same effects, a dramatic decline, bats disappearing not only from the cave, but of course, if they disappear in the cave, die in the cave, they never leave the cave and come out onto the summer landscape. So they never return to bat houses, barns, attics, trees where they're roosting in the summer. They don't return to the side of Vilas Hall here where you're producing the show. Because they're dying during the winter months.
And, anything that can be done? It sounds like there's not anything that can be done.
No, and we've done all we can to try and slow the progression of the disease, but at this point, we have very minimal tools in our available in the kit to be able to slow or stop this disease. And certainly, we've been on the cutting edge of trying to figure out what might work. But at this point, we haven't found anything that would be effective.
So, before the break, you mentioned, Jennifer, that it is the cave dwelling bats that are susceptible to white nose syndrome and not the tree bats.
Yeah. So just a little bit of background. Mm-hmm. The cave-dwelling bats, their goal at this time of the year is to store up as much fat as possible because they're going to go into a site, a cave or a mine, while we enter the cold months and there's no insects available for, 6 or 7 months. That's like going to the refrigerator or the kitchen, opening the door of the fridge for 6 or 7 months and there's nothing there to eat. So they've got to store up fat, and then they've got to conserve their energy when they hibernate. And they do that by dropping their body temperature down to the temperature of the cave, which is about 48 degrees Fahrenheit or so. They slow their breathing and only take one breath every 12 minutes. Their heart only beats 4 times per minute. And they're also turning down or shutting off their immune system. And those are all ways of saving energy. Occasionally they'll wake up. Every few weeks they might arouse from that hibernating state, and that costs a lot of energy. It costs them 30 to 60 days worth of body fat. The disease white nose syndrome is caused by a fungus, and this fungus can only grow in cold cave temperatures on the cold bodies of already hibernating bats. So when the bats have the fungus on them, they begin waking up, and they start waking up frequently every few days. So they very quickly burn through the stored fat, and they end up starving to death.
So it's not as though the fungus itself is somehow physically killing them. It's because they wake up. Yeah. Well, that's very sad. I mean, is there anything that we can do, if not to slow down the progression of white nose syndrome?
Well, slowing the spread of the disease, or not accelerating it faster than the bats are spreading it, is really important. So something we can control as humans who may occasionally visit a cave as a tourist or a recreational caver, or as biologists, we need to be really cautious about our gear, our clothing, and making sure that we're appropriately cleaning and decontaminating our clothing if we're visiting from cave to cave or cave to mine, especially if we're going outside of the Midwest, perhaps farther west, or to another country, another region. And so there's information available online about how to appropriately clean and decontaminate clothing. And for the average general public cave tourist who's maybe taking a tour at a place like Cave of the Mounds or Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico, you can simply make sure that you wear something different as you travel from site to site. Most of us don't visit caves that frequently, so it's easy to just wear a different set of clothes and shoes and not move stuff between sites.
And we should not visit those caves after October 1st?
Yeah, so anytime a bat is hibernating, whether it's a sick bat or a healthy bat, it's critical for them to be able to keep those fat reserves. They've just barely got enough to make it through winter as it is. So even if we're quiet, even if we're still and not creating what we think is disturbance, just our presence underground disturbs hibernating bats and causes a cascade effect of bats waking up. So one bat wakes up, it flies around and wakes up other bats. And from October 1st to May 15th, we want folks to stay out of caves that have bats hibernating to avoid that disturbance, to give these guys every chance that we can give them.
Jennifer Riddell is a cave and mine specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Paul White is also with us, a mammal ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. They are here to talk with us about bats, the latest developments when it comes to white nose syndrome in Wisconsin. We are also have been talking about a new discovery of a new bat species in Wisconsin, the evening bat. We welcome your questions about bats. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and check out some pictures of little brown bats and a video that we did before we started the show with our guests about the little brown bats that visit Vilas Hall every year around this time. And I meant to ask you, and we'll get to calls in just a moment, there is a Wisconsin Bat Festival taking place, of all things, on October 1st in Milwaukee. And we'll be sure to post information about that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as well. It's going to be at the Milwaukee Public Museum. And, Paul, what are we going to learn at the Wisconsin Bat Festival?
Well, we'll have folks from around the nation coming to talk about bats, talk about the value of bats, the economic value of bats, the importance of them, and really why we should care about them. There's going to be, from the Organization of Bat Conservation, Rob Myers, who's been on various talk shows around the nation, and he'll have a couple of fruit bats with us, so and vampire bats, so we'll be able to learn all about the different bats that we have in the throughout the country.
Is he known as the Batman?
Well,
<One of them. laughs>
there's a loose title for anybody that works with bats, either Batwoman or Batman, certainly.
The fruit bat is that really big one. I mean,
right. So he has a Malaysian flying fox, which is their wingspan is about 6 feet. So it's a very large bat, and it's a beautiful individual, and it's actually one of the ones that's on the brochure, I believe.
Yeah, and I'll jump in too. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of different fruit bat species. So if you're a fan of the book Stella Luna, those bats will be there. We'll have some native Wisconsin species as well. So this is a chance to actually get up close and personal with some of these huge and beautiful bats. And then there's a lot of hands-on activities. It's a family event. It's free at the Milwaukee Public Museum on October 1st.
Hands-on. Somebody might say, I don't want my hands on a bat. But we did have a Facebook comment saying, oh, the bats are so cute. Too bad they carry so many diseases. Should we be afraid of bats when it comes to rabies or anything else?
Well, certainly, just like any wild animal, you don't want to handle them in any way. And bats, I think, in some cases, get a bad rap for having diseases, or at least seemingly have diseases. And the most common one people think of would be rabies. And actually, it's a very low percentage of the wild population that actually have rabies. So it's about 0.1% of the wild population that actually have rabies. So overall, it's a very minimal amount of bats that actually have them. But it's still, you have to use precautions if you find a sick or dead bat, not to handle it with your hands, not to pick it up. Make sure to use proper equipment, a shovel or something to dispose of it, so kids or dogs or pets don't pick it up as well.
We have so many calls. Let's start taking some calls. Val in Pleasant Prairie is with us. Hi, Val.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. I have a problem over here with the bats. I'm not very fond of them. And for many years, for quite a few years, I see this dropping in my patio on a cement floor. I couldn't figure out where it comes from. My house is a brick house. But I have light fixtures over my garage door in the back of the house. And the opening is from the bottom. And now I found out, when I look closer, there is a bat inside hanging over there. I use those lights very, very seldom. So how do I get rid? Who do I call to get rid of it? I have a tomatoes growing not far from there. Soon as the tomatoes start to ripe, big tomatoes, something breaks the skin, bites.
I don't think a bat would. Does a bat want to eat a tomato?
No, we don't have any bats in Wisconsin that eat fruit. They only eat insects, so they're actually benefiting your tomatoes by eating some of the pests that will attack tomatoes, and then additionally, bats are producing guano, which are high in nitrogen, which is high in nitrogen, so it's an excellent garden fertilizer. So the benefit of bats is related to the tomatoes there. But as far as getting them to move away from an area where you don't want them roosting, sometimes, and it's often a light fixture, because it's kind of a covered area, sheltered area. So just like you see them in the corners of the building here on Vilas Hall, bats will sometimes be under overhangs or under people's porch roofs. And sometimes they're there during the day. Sometimes they're there just at night as a night roost, using it to rest in the middle of the night. But either way, one of the ways is to remove the roosting surface, or the thing that they're actually hanging on to, or the thing that's sheltering them, to see if that will make the place more uncomfortable for them. They want to be warm and dry and cozy, just like the rest of us and other animals. You know, they're trying to shelter from the elements and stay hidden from predators during the day. So if you can make them more exposed, if you can make it less comfortable for them, they may move on all on their own.
We have just a minute before news break. I don't know, Paul, can you, what if I want to attract a bat to my backyard? Should I put a bat box up?
Certainly, yeah. So we always say it's location, location, location. So it's really about where you put it. You want it 15 to 20 feet high, usually a bat house that has multiple chambers to allow different roosting opportunities and thermal environments for the bats to choose. You want it a dark color so it retains heat. And then also, in open sunlight. So we would ideally like 6 to 8 hours of sunlight a day. And in some cases, people do all the right things and they put up a bat house and it just doesn't work. And it sometimes folks have more success when they're closer to water sources. So usually we say that there's a higher occupancy rate closer to water, so about a quarter mile away from water. So we have bat house building instructions on our website. So folks are welcome to visit that to build the correct bat houses.
We're going to check news again from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll talk more about bats. And we'll hear a bat, and we'll talk about what bats are saying. I think we have some audio of a hoary bat, and we'll talk more about the bat populations in Wisconsin and welcome your questions after this news. This is the Ideas Network. Don't touch that dial. There's nothing wrong with your radio. That was the very interesting call of a hoary bat. That what was Jennifer? What was that bat saying there?
I think it was saying, "I'm hungry. I'm hungry." So a hoary bat is one of our migratory species. It's also the largest bat that we have in the state. Very, very rare for any member of the general public to see. Certainly, we as bat biologists out looking for them don't actually capture them or see them very often. But listening in on their echolocation is one way that we can find out about them and where they're at and what they're doing. So the hoary bat echolocation call, like all bat calls in Wisconsin, happens above the range of human hearing. So that sound that you just heard is happening all over the place in forests every night as bats are out hunting, but we can't hear it.
Oh.
So the call is recorded by a device that we have, a bat detector, and the frequency is divided down to a range that our ears can listen to.
I had no idea. That's really interesting. You know, and I realized that we talked about the now 8 species of bats, but we didn't. We only named the newly discovered evening bat, the little brown bat, the big brown bat, and the hoary bat. What else? Who else lives in Wisconsin?
Sure. So the migratory species are the hoary bat, the evening bat, also the eastern red bat, and the silver-haired bat, and then the cave hibernating bats, the species that are all threatened and threatened status because of white nose syndrome, are little brown, big brown, eastern pipistrel, and northern long-eared bat.
Let's take some more calls. We have Jeanette in Green Bay with us now. Hi, Jeanette.
Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to tell you, we have a home in Sturgeon Bay on the channel, and we have had bats for years under our shutters. And we have learned to live with them quite nicely because they take care of our mosquito population, so we can sit on our deck very nice. So anyway, but we did notice, and also the best bat houses in the whole wide world we found were these old-fashioned wooden shutters, the three boards with two cleats. They have loved those, and they've lived under our shutters for years. There was a huge decrease in our bat population this past year. And, of course, that's part of we were afraid of that because of the disease in the caves. But we did have some. And Saturday night, we had a little bonfire outside, and they were above our head, and it was just like a dance. They were going back and forth. So we're assuming they had some pups because it looked like there were a few more than we normally see. Do the pups stay with the mom and dad now, or how long do they stay with them? Are they in their roosting spots with them? And then when can we expect the bats to go back to their hibernation?
So a little bat biology here,
sure.
Paul.
Well, thank you for the comments. Yes, yeah, certainly. The interesting thing about females is actually they're the ones that are they take care of the pups throughout the year. And so they usually give birth around June 1st, and then they're taking care of those pups for at least the remainder of the summer. And so pups are starting to fly around 4 to 5 weeks. And so the mother is then teaching them how to forage, but then also showing them, you know, how to fly and becoming proficient in that. And so females actually start to leave, the adult females start to leave anywhere in the end of July through the middle of August. And so they tend to leave their juveniles there to continue to forage and eat those the insects that are local. And so as the female adults move back to those hibernation sites, wherever they may be, and it could be in Door County, it could be in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, or even in southern Wisconsin, the juveniles will remain there for a while and then eventually make their way back. And so I would imagine that this is kind of the last stronghold that you'll see for a little while, and then the bats might be migrating either to Door County or into the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Did you have something to add, Jennifer?
Yeah, I just want to say for Jeanette and other folks who have a bat roost that they maybe haven't told us about at the Wisconsin Bat Program at DNR, we're really interested in knowing where bats are still hanging out during the summer months, and that's particularly important now. Bats have died in Wisconsin from white-nose syndrome, so bats that are returning, even though there's fewer at your roost site, those are maybe white-nose survivors at this point, especially next summer if you've still got bats. And so we've got an online reporting form. If you search Wisconsin Bat Program or go to the DNR website and search bats, you can find that reporting form, and we really want to know where those bats are at so that we can have a good idea statewide what the big picture is, how many bats we still have that are reproducing during the summer months.
That's, I'm trying to think if you're saying even by next summer that they would be the survivors. Are we talking about it wiping out the populations that quickly?
Yeah, we think we may have lost about half of the hibernating bats in Wisconsin last winter, given where we know the disease was. We are facing now the second year, which is the more devastating year once the disease is present. And so I expect that we'll lose the majority of our hibernating bats in this coming winter, which means the bats that come up and out of caves and survive next spring and summer and go to someone's bat house are potential survivors, and we really want to know why they're surviving. So the first step is in locating them.
Sure. So. And not all our cave bat species are affected the same way. Some species, like the northern long-eared bat, eastern pipistrelle, and little brown bat, are heavily affected by white nose, whereas we know big brown bats aren't as affected, potentially due to their environmental conditions that they choose during the hibernation season. They tend to choose cold, dry climates that aren't necessarily as suitable for the fungus.
Are the species susceptible to white nose syndrome further west still disease-free?
Well, at this point, we're still learning about where the disease is and how these particular species are going to be affected. We know that there's a variety of different species out there, very similar to the ones we have here in Wisconsin. But right now, they actually just found the disease in Washington State. Uh-huh. So it has bridged the gap of the Rockies, and we're interested to know how that might affect these populations out there. The problem is they don't really have a good sense of where their caves and mines and hibernacula are located, so they're still searching in those areas first to try and find these populations.
Let's go to Brian in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on here. I am an environmental educator with a great passion for bats, and I just wanted to say on the subject of what we can do about white nose syndrome that there is a lot of stuff that, you know, that I have read about in, as far as what discoveries by bat biologists in concerning white nose syndrome. There's been discovery of some bacteria which may be able to inhibit the growth of the fungus on bats, and they've discovered that bats in Asia are resistant to white nose syndrome, and it may have infected them sometime in the past, and they've adapted to be resistant to it. And so there is some hope of bats becoming resistant to white nose syndrome or recovering from it. The important thing is, you know, we need to fund that research and make sure that they have roosts to go to when they do recover. So, you know, even if we completely lose bats from a roost, it's important to preserve those roosting areas because bats may come back there someday. And if the population rebounds, which will take a long time, but it may happen if we're lucky, and that we need to be sure they have a place to go to. So in terms of what we can do for bat conservation, you know, donating to and funding bat research into white nose syndrome and preserving their roosts, because it's so crucial for bats to have places where they can breed and hibernate.
And Brian, thank you. We're so short on time. I know you wanted to also debunk some superstitions about bats, but you know what? I think we can get a quick react on Brian says there are some things to do still that might help the bat population recover. Who wants to handle that?
Sure. So, you know, we're part of a collaborative nationwide and at this point international, as Brian referred to, effort to understand the disease, and in understanding the disease also be able to develop some management strategies or treatment strategies. So there's three different areas of research where, you know, we've got different groups, agencies and universities and research groups looking at disease management. So we're looking at treating the environment itself. Can we alter a cave or a mine or decontaminate it to prevent fungal growth? Can we target just the fungus itself? Can the genetics be altered in a way that the fungus is less detrimental to bats? And then can we treat the bats themselves? Could we produce a vaccine? Or could we treat, as Brian mentioned, with some sort of topical probiotic bacteria? So those are all areas that we're working collaboratively with others on understanding. And his point is exactly right. It's still a good idea to put up a bat house. As Paul mentioned, big brown bats are less susceptible. So big brown bats use bat houses. Little browns, if they recover, still need a place to go in the summer.
We have such a short amount of time now. I'm assuming some of the bat superstitions that should be debunked. Bats are not going to fly into my hair and bite me in the neck. Is that right?
Correct. And just our caller from Sturgeon Bay had mentioned, you know, they're having a fire and they see these bats flying around, and it's often just, you know, they're eating insects as they are. The insects are attracted to you and they're eating insects, so they're actually doing quite the benefit and they're not going to be biting you in any way.
So in our final moments here, I guess, what do you hope for in terms of Wisconsin's bats in the near future? Paul first.
Well, I think that our continued efforts is exactly what we're looking for. The education and outreach, we feel like we've done a good job. We want to continue that. Just like Brian had mentioned, we want to make sure that people continue to put up artificial structures for bats, maintain their environment that they already have for bats, to ensure that those survivors remain safe and protected, especially as white nose progresses throughout the state.
And last 30 seconds for you, Jennifer.
Yeah, my message for folks is to learn. Children especially teach parents and grandparents, but tell your friends and neighbors if you value bats and tell them why bats are important and debunk myths. If we can prevent direct killing of individual bats, that's really critical for survival of species at this point in time.
Jennifer Riddell is a cave and mine specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Paul White is a mammal ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and we thank them both very much for being in studio with us today to talk about bats. You can learn more about bats at the Wisconsin Bat Festival, which will be on Saturday, October 1st at the Milwaukee Public Museum, and we'll put more information about that and other information on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.